Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast, episode 56 with Keishi and Yuri. Keishi, how are you today?
I'm good. It sounds like it's the end of the world here. How about you?
What are you experiencing, bombing or what?
It's like a thunderstorm. It was nice and sunny earlier today, and then it got cloudy, and now it's... You can probably hear it in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty intense.
We're about, what, 10 kilometers apart?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. If I look out my window, like, I still see, like, half the sky is blue. And now I'm kind of seeing it gray up a little. Like, it's a bit dark, getting darker and cloudy. So maybe it's going to start probably pouring in the next hour or hour and a half or half hour. Who knows? But this is interesting because, like, we're that far apart, but, like, we have completely different weathers going. I'm sure it's common. I'm pretty sure, like, any climate scientist or general scientist would be like, yeah, there's a reason for that. But it's still interesting given how close we are, but the weather is different.
Yeah, it's raining here. Hopefully it stops soon. But yeah, it didn't stop us from recording this podcast.
All right, we're in
for now.
It's easy to say we're recording from the comforts of our own homes. What about food? Oh, not food. What about drinks? What do you have in terms of the drinks of the day?
Yeah, so today I have Aquarius Sparkling. So we talked about Aquarius a couple of times here, perhaps. We talked about its closely related drink, Pocari Sweat. And it's not so appealing name, but yeah, it's I guess it's a sports drink. It's one of those, what do you call them? You probably know better. I don't know.
Last time we called it a rehydration drink, but it's one of these drinks that you drink to avoid getting dehydrated. So it contains electrolytes. And I think American side of things, they probably consider Gatorade and Powerade and sports drinks be that. But given how prevalent heat waves are in Japan, there's always a line of drinks that are sold, especially during the summertime.
Yeah,
or kind of salty in nature.
Yeah, so I think it's like Gatorade kind of, and I've never seen them sparkling before. I've noticed this one in the vending machine the other day, and they also had it in the supermarket today, so I decided to get it.
Okay,
let me try it. Tastes like grapefruit. Oh, actually, it says grapefruit flavor.
Is it grapefruit flavored though?
Yeah, it says so on the cover actually.
Okay. Well, that explains everything.
Yeah, and as we were discussing before, it's got the citric acid, the coenzyme in Japanese, which I guess is explained by the fact that it's grapefruit inside. But all in all, it's decent, I think. I think it's like 7 out of 10. It's different from the regular Aquarius because, again, I think this one's sweeter and it's got actual flavor. So, yeah, it's not bad. So what are you drinking?
On my end, I have Real Gold. Similar to what you were drinking probably a few weeks back, a few episodes back. But this one is Real Gold Dragon Boost and has a nice picture of a dragon on a thunder strike, on a lightning strike image thingy.
I think we were just talking that when most people outside of Asia think of Asia, they think of dragons like that.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it. So, of course, any foreigner will be like, oh, look at this. It's a straight up Asian drink. Keishi, you're Japanese. What's your thoughts on it?
My thoughts is it's a cool dragon, but I don't think it has much to do with Japan.
Yeah. So I guess the lesson here is, like, if you're thinking, oh, let me buy some shirts with dragons on them and then fly to Japan because I'm going to look good.
Do not.
Yeah. I don't think Japanese people are, well, most Japanese people are walking around with dragons on their shirts.
Yeah. There are some, but I don't think they're, mostly they're not people you probably want to hang out with. So.
Okay. All right, but let's give it a taste. I don't know, like, I like the sound of Dragon Boost. I was like, I want that. But of course, it's also playing to my foreigner view of, like, oh, it's a dragon. Might be Asian related, might be cool. Of course not. It's not. Definitely tastes like an energy drink. You know what? Oh, there we go. I have lightning. No, I have thunder in mine too. It tastes like melted candy.
Tastes like melted candy.
Like, maybe you think of a cough drop or something.
Yeah,
that's melted down into, like, a liquid. That's what it tastes like.
So is that good or is it bad?
I don't know. You know, it's a good question. Has six types of something. I can't read the rest of that kanji. I'll give it a 6.9 for the dragon and the thunder strike.
All right, so we got to search for a better energy drink to sponsor this show, I guess.
Well, it's not bad. I just, you know, that's the thing. Like, I can't with Red Bull, at least you can kind of feel your heart palpitate and you can feel like, you know, you're breathing speed up. But
yeah,
in the case of these other energy drinks, I don't know if they're particularly energy drinks or they're just being promoted as such, because I think there's quite a bit of energy drinks around Japan, but they're, if anything, they're just like a boost of vitamin C or something.
Yeah, and I also think it might have something to do with the regulations or or whatever. But I also believe that the Japanese Red Bull is not the same one as the one in Europe or perhaps in the United States. But
maybe that's a good thing.
Maybe that's a good thing. But yeah. Don't quote me on that.
Don't quote on that. This podcast is for not informational, not educational, entertainment purposes only.
Exactly.
I was about to say informational or educational.
Everything we say, take it with a grain of salt.
That's the rule of life. Anything that you hear, make sure you double check it for yourself.
Exactly.
What are we talking about today?
Yeah, so I think the main topic is we'll take a close look at our publishing process. We'll go from the very beginning, so from kind of coming up with the topic all the way to getting the piece of content published. I think we talked about some of these things in bits and pieces here and there for different episodes.
Yeah.
But I think this will be the first time that we kind of focus an entire episode on it and turn it into sort of a guide or an overview of the entire process that we use.
Yeah.
And I think it will be also interesting to see kind of the differences between how you do things, how I do things, and so on. But before doing that, I think just a couple of things. So first, we're almost done with reading the book that we decided to read to kind of review on this podcast.
Yeah.
Not necessarily rocket science. So we'll talk about that for a while. We have to choose the next book to conquer.
Let's do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And then and then just a news flash, but Richard Branson is going into space in, I believe, like 6 hours or something, and by the time we publish this, he's hopefully safely back. So
wait, is he going for like a split second? Why is he gonna be back so fast?
Yeah, I think it's just a few minutes because it's not going into the orbit or anything. It's going up whatever 80 kilometers, 90 kilometers, and then coming down.
So. All right, this kind of segues into that book that we are reading. What's it called? It's not rocket science?
Yeah, not necessarily rocket science.
Not necessarily rocket science. I finished reading it a few days ago, and this was kind of like our book for the month to read and discuss it afterwards. So did you finish it?
Yeah, I finished it. I think there's like two or three interviews at the end of the book. I didn't read for those because I finished the book.
Yeah, same.
20 minutes before jumping on the call with you.
Okay.
But yeah, I enjoy all books about space, but I'd rate this one like 6.5 out of 10 maybe.
Okay.
I kind of struggled to find a bigger point, I guess, within the book. It's like in the beginning there was kind of the recap of what the space age is about and how we got from like the Neanderthals all the way to being able to go to the moon and into space and establish a permanent presence on the ISS and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I also, again, I think her career is really interesting because she kind of jumped from one thing to another in a way, but within the realm of space. But she started as kind of the communications person for what was like an association of space companies, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And then she went into the Mars simulation company or organization, where essentially she was living as if she was living on Mars, which I thought was pretty cool. And then she went into the private sector and did communications for a small rocket, reusable rocket company.
Yeah.
And just all around, she's essentially a communicator that I guess throughout her career was focused on translating space into kind of the general public and informing the general public about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think there's two things that I think are really cool. And one is I think it's really important for somebody like her that's not necessarily of engineering background to take all those things that might seem very centered around engineering and then translate them into more simpler language and into things that people can understand, even if they didn't go to MIT, essentially. And then I think the second part is more kind of personal on her level. I think it just seems like she had a lot of fun and she had a blast and she's having a blast doing all these things. And and I think that's really important because, again, she found something she was passionate about. And like the first thought might be, oh, I'm not an engineer, so I can't work for SpaceX. And, oh, I'm not a whatever military test pilot, so I can't be an astronaut. So maybe I should just do something completely else and go into whatever banking or I don't know, food and beverage or something. But she somehow found her niche within the industry, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, overall, I don't think it was a bad read. And I kind of enjoyed the story, her story. But at the same time, I don't think it was too groundbreaking.
Because I think on your end, you've read a lot of books like this. So there's a lot of probably overlap with what you read before.
Yeah, there's some overlap, and it's also just I don't know. It didn't come to me as super impactful or as a super exciting story or something. I mean, by no, it's definitely very exciting, and she's having an exciting life. But at the same time, I guess at least in the realm of space, it's not as exciting as reading about the story of SpaceX or something.
Yeah.
So how about you? Did you?
I'll give it like a between a 7 and 8. I liked it. With the first two chapters as well, like, you know, the introduction to how we became a spacefaring civilization.
Yeah.
And the conclusion, or the last few chapters, I also kind of skimmed through because of that. It was just more so talking about the importance of us becoming more gearing up more and more towards space and, like, yeah, the benefits of it. I guess it's kind of preaching to the choir because I think both of us agree with the message. And so it's not exactly telling us anything new. Whereas for someone that hasn't thought about it much, it'd probably be more important for them.
Yeah.
But like the middle part of the book where she talks about her own personal stories and her work there is probably the most fascinating part. And to me, the most fascinating part is, like you said, she's not from a STEM background and she's a marketing communications type of person, which, because, like, again, if I think, even myself, if I think about it, I'm like, all right, if I don't come from a science background, if I didn't major in like science or engineering school, then I will not be considered for anything space related whatsoever. Because if you think about astronauts, most astronauts are, well, I don't know about most, but my image is that most of them are indeed from such backgrounds, and probably as well as like military flight.
Yeah, exactly.
Background.
Test pilots.
So when I think about it, it's like, it just feels like it's not exactly accessible to a person like me. But having read that, it's like, it's fascinating how she made it accessible and she got into it. And that's the most interesting part, is like, even the most smartest person might not think that there's a way inside, but then someone finds a way inside.
Yeah,
kind of goes back to, like, you know, you can probably achieve anything that you kind of want in life. But yeah, you kind of, I don't know. So I really like that part. Like, the middle part of the book was really great.
Yeah, I think it was nice because it showcased like how within a certain sector, there's just different people that make things happen, right? It's like, you think of aviation, you think of becoming a pilot or becoming a flight attendant, but then there's like 1,000 other different professions that make it all possible. There's the people bringing the food to the airplane. There's the people that tow the airplane on the ground. There's the people, there's the ATC people, the air traffic controllers, and so on. So the universe is pretty vast. And it's the same with space. There's, of course, the people that build the rockets and that fly the rockets. But then there's also another, like, 1,000 different professions around it, whether it's communicators like her or the people that get the contracts to raise the money to make all this possible.
Yeah.
Or the people that design the spacesuits, or the people that whatever, that bring the fuel to the rocket, that load the fuel on the rocket. And I think a lot of time when you think of doing something, it's kind of easy to focus on the part that's the most visible, which would be the astronauts in this case.
Yeah.
But for many people, I think it's better to just find their niche somewhere else, kind of out of the spotlight, because there's more opportunities, there's arguably less competition, and also arguably, depending on what your personality is, it might even be a much better fit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would agree. I think the kind of the summaries of the space age and so on, it's always nice to read about it, as I mentioned, I think, on this podcast before, but it's also nothing new. But her experiences at the three different organizations or four different organizations that she talked about kind of in detail. Yeah, I would agree. I'd give that part like 7 or 8.
Yeah. Oh, so do you want to decide on a book real quick before we jump into today's topic?
Yeah, sure. How about the Walmart guy? I've heard about it. I forgot the name. Made in America.
Walmart.
I think it's an old book. It's 288 pages.
Sam Walton. All right, let's do that.
I'll order it. Okay. So Sam Walton, Made in America it is. Okay. So I guess we can jump into the topic of the day.
All right. So let's talk about our content publishing process. And I guess the reason why we want to talk about this is because for any new time blogger, any new time side hustler, especially in the digital space, kind of like your first questions are, what do I write about? How do I decide on a topic? How do I do it? And how do I push it out there? And what do I do? You know, like, and this is what we want to talk about today. Probably the very first things that we're going to talk about is how to decide on a topic. I know, like, especially with talking with a lot of friends and like just simply suggesting them, why don't you start a website or why don't you start a blog? Their first reaction is always like, well, what do I even write about?
Yeah.
So I think that's an important starting point. So how to decide on a topic.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it can be really hard because you can also feel like there's everything's already out there. Everything's already covered.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the block that I guess many people face, including myself in some cases. And I bet you you sometimes feel a similar way. And I think that's why it's important to actually know how to decide on the topic and how to choose what you're going to write about. And I think when we talk about this here, we're mostly focusing on SEO.
Mm.
So it's mostly about keyword research and looking at essentially All right. So what are the keywords that you can rank for with the site that you have at your disposal? So if you've been running your site for a while and it's already got some authority, you might be able to go after different keywords than if your site is brand new and you're looking for what to write your first article about.
Yeah.
But in either case, I think it has to start in your mind, right? It's like,
yeah,
whatever it is that your blog is about, then you got to just come up with some keyword in your mind that you're then going to do your research around. And once you have that, so let's say it's a dog site, so maybe the keywords are you want to look at dog food. Mm. Then it's up to you to either use one of the keyword research tools or just the Google, what is it called, the auto-suggest feature as kind of the motivation or as kind of the source of additional ideas and look for those. So how do you go through this process? Do you have any kind of tools that you use or any criteria for you to select what you're going to write about or what you're not going to write about? Do you have any tips about finding the kind of the initial keywords in the first place?
Oh, okay. So where I'm going to come from with this is already with the assumption that whoever's listening, they already have a website on a certain topic. Because if you don't have a website on a certain topic and you're listening to this, then you might want to first have a website based around a niche. And I think we already have an episode on how to pick a niche.
Yeah, exactly.
So check that out first. But assuming you already have done that and you have already like a website or a blog or a vlog, whatever, on a category or an area or a topic, blah, 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 that you've chosen. How do I do it? When you first start out, when I first started out, I just like, you grasp at straws you pull things out of your bleep, to say the least. You just, I don't know, come up with a list of what comes to mind that you can write about, and you write about that. Yeah. I think at the start, which is what I did as well, because at the start, you really don't know what's going to work or not. And just to kind of get it going, I think that's a good enough way to get things going. And that's how I did it. And sometimes when I don't know about what to write about, I'll do that again, you know, just to get it rolling and get back into the practice of like finding out what to write about. So I think that is a viable approach. Then to come up with a topic, I'll start with Google first, and I'll start Googling around what topics and how much search results they get and where can I fit in there. So like I'll open up Google Keywords, the Google Keywords Planner tool, but I think you could do it with other SEO tools. I think just can also offer it, and just go on a typing spree and type in whatever that comes to mind is what I'll do. And then whatever seems to be within my reach, meaning it doesn't get searched a lot and has low competition, I'll add that to a list, and I'll be like, all right, I want to write about this because it looks like I can compete for it. And that's how I kind of go about it, you know. So two answers. First is make stuff up on the fly, come up with some stuff on the fly that, you know, because you got to get started somehow, so you may as well do something. And then also look at what other people are writing, look for what people are searching for, which is probably the most important part, and pick a topic that gets searched, but somewhere where you can compete. And that requires, so basically it's like a lot of Googling, seeing what phrases get searched and what the competition is like and where, if you can compete there. So if a term gets searched, like, I don't know, like 10 to 100 times a month, sounds low, but I'll take that because it tells me maybe you have a chance of hitting the first page or being the first spot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think now that you're bringing it up, I think there's always two things to consider, right? And again, we're talking about SEO here, not talking about like trying to be an influencer kind of blogger, but there's always the competition and the search volume, right? So it's like how many people actually search. So maybe you can rank number one for like, what color shirt did MacGyver wear in season 2, episode 21?
MacGyver?
Or whoever, yeah.
Okay. How do you know MacGyver? That's like old-fashioned.
He used to play on TV when I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you maybe you can write an article about what color shirt did MacGyver wear in episode 20 of season 1, and you can rank first probably because nobody writes that article, mm-hmm. but then at the same time, nobody searches for that article probably, right? Or maybe one person every blue moon. Mm-hmm. So it's a wasted effort in a way, right? And then again, on kind of the very other end of the spectrum is like just the term MacGyver, right? Let's say you want to rank for MacGyver. There's probably a lot of people that search it even in 2021. But there's just no way you're going to rank anywhere near the top, right? It's probably going to be like Wikipedia and maybe IMDb, the International mm-hmm. Movie Database, and a bunch of those really high authority websites. So it's kind of about finding a I guess you could say the golden middle path, right? It's like it has to have relatively low competition, but it also has to be searched by quite a few people. And that's where I think it's worth mentioning, like you were saying, keywords that have search volume between 100 and between 10 and 100, for example. I think it's worth mentioning that the search volume that most tools, or probably all tools, report is usually way off for a couple of reasons. One, just hard to get the data. Two, every time you write an article, it ranks for a lot of different keywords, not just the one that you intend to rank it for.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be discouraged just because it has 10 or just because it shows a 0 to 10 or something. But I think it serves as a good indicator, like kind of an order of a magnitude indicator.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's, especially in your beginnings, you can try to go after the bigger keywords, but those require much more effort in terms of link building and so on to rank for than some of the lower hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's kind of the one way where you kind of brainstorm the ideas and then look for the keywords, look who's ranking and so on, and decide whether you want to go for it or not.
Yeah.
I think the other way is, and the other way to kind of generate a longer list of keywords at the same time is to find a few competitors that are not too far ahead of you and then see what they rank for. So maybe if there's a site that's not too far ahead from you and it's ranking like number one or number two for a lot of different keywords, then you can try to go after same or similar keywords and kind of reverse engineer that site and almost compete on the same topics. And for that, I would use something like Ahrefs or I think Ubersuggest can do it as well. Where you punch in the URL and it gives you the list of the topics, the list of the keywords that site ranks for, that you can then take as kind of the basis for your topics.
Yeah, I agree. But I think first things first, if you're a beginner, it's okay to start off with whatever. And then later on, you start optimizing your process. You start being more selective with what you pursue. But to get the ball rolling, it's okay to start with whatever.
I think it's okay, but it's also good to be systematic about it. Because again, like you can write 100 articles and get no traffic from Google because you either went after two competitive terms or after terms that nobody searches. And I think it's fine for like the first 1, 2, 3, 4 articles.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you write 100 articles and you get zero traffic, I think it can be discouraging. So you better get at least some basics of keyword research right pretty soon in your process if building a kind of an SEO-based site is what you're after. Because that's kind of the core of the entire thing, right? It's finding keywords that you can rank for and that get traffic.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yes, that's kind of how we look for keywords, I guess. And then the next step, I think, is to take the keywords that you find and that you want to go after and kind of plan out the piece of content that you're going to produce, whether you're going to write it yourself or whether you're going to hire somebody to write it.
Yeah.
I think the next step is to kind of prepare a brief or an outline of the article with the details and the specifications. So how do you approach that?
Well, I outsource some of my stuff and I write my other stuff as well. I think you outsource 100% of your stuff, right?
Yeah, 99%. Yeah.
Well, when it comes to writing a brief for outsourcing, I'll just be like, well, first, obviously, I have to have a topic in mind. And for that, I'll probably also think about what exactly that I want in, say, part one, part two, part three, part four of the article. And I write out the outline like that, like part one or paragraph one would be this. So I just, for the most part, I split articles into parts.
Yeah.
So let's say it's on let's say it's an article on affiliate marketing. So part one would be, what is affiliate marketing? So that, you know, it gives the writer a chance to like explain what it is. Part two is like, how can you use affiliate marketing to earn on your site and blah, blah, blah. Part three would be like examples of affiliate marketing. Part four would be like, I don't know. But something like that. So I'll break them down into parts like that. And for each of these parts, I'll put in like little detailed notes, like, you know, mention this, mention that, mention this, mention that. And that kind of gives a writer clear idea of what to write about. So So essentially it is an outline and something that I would probably do also for myself. I send it to another person, but if I'm sending it to another person, then I make it much more detailed. So like I leave very little guesswork on their end so they could complete it without headaches.
Yeah.
In my case, I don't do as much for myself because I can probably think on the spot what I want. But yeah, it always starts off with an outline and that's it. That's interesting. And if anything, like I think we mentioned, or I mentioned on a previous episode, was that I make sure not to request an introduction or a conclusion because people write the most boring introductions and conclusions. And I don't think it's good. It's good user experience. So I request that the writer omits those. And that's it. And then once, you know, that's it. Then either they write it up or I write it up.
Interesting. So do you write this into some sort of Google Doc or do...
No. Well, if I'm writing it, I'll do it in Google Docs. If not, I just write a literal outline in like the Notepad app or the TextEdit app of that, you know, that doesn't require rocket science.
Yeah.
Write out an outline and paste it into Upwork and send it to the writer and ask them if they have any questions. And if it's clear enough, they say no. And the process starts.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think my outlining process is probably pretty similar to yours, but essentially I just like to look at the top 4 or 5 of the top 10 results. So generally try to look for sites that are kind of similar to mine. So if there's like a Wikipedia ranking and like a blog and Amazon and another blog and like WikiHow or something, I'd look at kind of the typical blog results mm-hmm. to see what Google wants in a way and kind of try to get the length of the article. So I try to go for like the average of the blog post generally. So okay. it might be 900 words, it might be 1,500 words, it might
Why
be.
Why do you do this?
Because I think there is something to essentially giving Google what Google wants, right?
Okay.
It's like if Google's already ranking a piece of content from a site that's arguably less authoritative than yours, then if you take what it's already ranking and try to include similar type of subtopics in the article and try to have it roughly the same length, I think it makes it easier for Google just to go and say, okay, this I like this and I'll post this. So essentially I like to look at the results first, prepare the brief based on that and based on some structures that I typically use. So I have pretty standardized templates for like versus articles, for like how to tutorial articles and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just create the brief in Notion and then the assistant goes in and creates a Google Doc with the where he copy pastes the brief essentially, and then for writers that I've onboarded into Notion, I can just kind of drag and drop and assign the articles to them. For writers that I'm still just starting to work with and just communicate with on Upwork and so on, I just copy paste the Google Doc link and have them either write directly into the document or copy paste the article once they finish it into the document. Because then that makes it easier down the road once it's further down in the process.
Okay.
But I'd say yeah, the two critical pieces for me in the brief process are just kind of figuring out what is ranking already,
yeah,
how long to have the article be, and then what the outline should be. And then sometimes I mention some specifics in terms of what to include in each sections. Sometimes the brief itself is very brief, no pun intended. So it differs, and it also differs on the writer that I send the article to, because I know that some writers can do the job even without too many instructions, because we work together for a longer time,
yeah.
Whereas others that I just started working with might need some more details.
Okay, so it's about the same.
But yeah, I think on kind of the higher level, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, I think any and all writing should start with an outline. It just makes it easier. And also, our own podcast, when they're not freeform, we also start with an outline.
Yeah, exactly.
I think even non-scripted ones have an outline, at least so we know where to go and what to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it's just a list of topics to talk about.
Yeah, outline is like, it's one of these things where you don't, I think, especially this would be the case of like for high school students and college students, they'd be like, I don't need an outline. I'm just going to write my essay tonight. And it's one of these things where you're like, whatever, I don't need to do extra work because I have to do work already. So why am I going to do an outline?
Yeah.
Like it just putting in that extra effort to write an outline makes the rest of the writing super easy. And it's just one of these things that if you're not doing it, you're not going to get, like, you only see the benefits of it when you start doing it. Otherwise, it's just like writing with a headache and you're like, all right, what do I write here? I don't know what to write here. I don't know how to connect this.
Yeah,
to that.
Exactly.
But if you had an out, or you could be like, this doesn't sound right for some reason and you don't understand why it doesn't sound right. But if you have an outline, you'd be like, all right, I realize that I need to segue from X to Z or this, or my topics don't really mesh well and need to revisit the outline. So it's like, outline really makes a whole difference.
Yeah, totally. And again, it's important when you're writing the article, but if you're having somebody else write it, then it's absolutely mm-hmm. crucial.
All right. So let's say someone has finished writing it or you have finished writing it. Wait, Keishi, going back, you say you outsource 90% or 99% of your content. What kind of content do you actually do yourself?
Mostly just for my aviation side. So that's mostly just stuff about hotels I stayed or flights that I take and so on. For my niche sites, other than my aviation side, which is more of a personal blog, I guess,
yeah.
I haven't written a content for quite some time.
Okay. All right, so now that we talked about deciding on a topic and actually writing it out, the next step is editing. What do you do for editing? Because I do it, I mean, like, if whether I get it or I'm the one that writes it, I'll run it through Grammarly. Then afterwards, maybe like an hour later after I publish it, I'll go ahead and reread it, and usually I'll find some more typos there. But my process is fairly simple. I just publish and reread afterwards.
Yeah, so maybe here it's worth kind of talking about editing and formatting at the same time, because at least in my process, it's kind of reversed. So what usually happens is when I get the article from the writer, mm-hmm. essentially they mark it as done in Notion. Then it goes to the assistant who takes the article, uploads it into WordPress, formats it, adds the headings, and saves the draft. And essentially, then I go into the draft, I read through it, I do the editing, I add some images, yeah. either from stock photos or from through the Amazon Images plugin. I don't know if I mentioned here before, but it lets you insert any image from Amazon. Without violating their terms of service. So I add any images, do any editing, add any internal links out of the article into others, and then I save it. So that's kind of the first stage. When I write this stuff for the aviation blog, I tend not to go back and edit stuff. I just write it, add the pictures, and publish it. And I know they're not perfect, but I think they're good enough. So yeah, I guess it really depends. I have Grammarly, but only the free version.
Yeah, me too.
Sometimes I don't think its suggestions are entirely correct, so I tend not to just accept everything. Actually,
well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even with the paid version, it'll sometimes suggest things that does not make sense adjusting. So I don't follow them. I just have a check for like dead obvious typos. Although I think it also misses some.
Yeah, exactly. I think so.
So, but it's just one of these little things that I do.
Yeah, I think it's good. I just read through each article fairly carefully, make some edits. I like you were saying about the intros. I used to do that in the past where I would say don't write the intro and don't write the outro essentially. But I realized that once you do like 10, 15 articles in a pretty short span of time, then even just writing those intros adds up to a lot of work. So I just kind of guided the writers to, again, I don't think they're world class, but I try to keep them at least half decent. And again, I think it depends on the type of website you're trying to build. So are you trying to have like 10 articles and have them all be perfect and going after big keywords, or do rather prefer to have like 100 articles that are good enough but are not perfect? And I think other than my aviation side, I think all my sides are kind of the latter.
Well, at your scale, the work really adds up, so it makes sense. Whereas in my case, I'm doing like one or two or three or four articles at a time.
Yeah. So
not an extra issue for me to add like literally three lines of introduction.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing I want to do is go back into the articles and rewrite some of the intros for those that don't rank and try to just update the content overall. But in kind of the initial publishing process, I don't care too much.
I guess one thing I forgot to mention is that, yeah, the images, because I will add images in the formatting and editing part. And the internal linking, like if I have content that's related to the new piece of writing that I'm going to publish, then I will try and find a way to sneak in an internal link to it. Images-wise, yeah, I'll use that app called Stencil
for
the most part. And that's it. And then I'll hit publish. But my stuff is like, once the most important part is the writing. Once the writing is done, then it's picture time and interlinking time. And then I hit publish. And then after that, it's out in the world.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think... I guess in my process, I think the most important part is always the keyword research and preparing the brief. And then and then luckily the writers take care of the rest up until the editing and formatting is taken care of. So so most of my time, I guess at least, is spent on keyword research and editing.
All right. What about after publishing? Do you do anything with the article?
No.
After publishing?
No. So I don't do any sort of promotion because, again, I'm going after the SEO traffic and not doing any social media or anything like that, at least for my niche size.
Why not?
I just don't find it worth it.
Okay.
It takes time and I don't think it brings enough return. Okay. I think the only thing is for my new doc site, I think I'm going to try Pinterest because I think it's a very Pinterest-friendly niche. But other than that, I don't really bother at this point. But the one thing that I do is once a week, I go back. And as I mentioned, when I edit the article, I add outbound internal links. So from the article that I'm editing to any relevant articles I published in the past. But then after publishing, I go back once a week and add inbound links. So I just have a list of the articles that I published that week. And I have a checkbox in Notion, essentially, that says internal linked. And I just go through that list. And for each article, I try to find at least one or two relevant pieces to link from to the new article to have some internal links pointing to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty much the only thing that I do after publishing.
Okay. What about coming back to update old content?
That's the thing that I've been trying to figure out how to do. Probably wasn't trying hard enough, to be honest. But that's the one thing that I really want to do. But I'm struggling to think of how to best approach it and how to best hire somebody to do that.
Okay. I mean, in my case, I just set a goal, update X number of articles this month or this week, and that's what I'll do. And I think that was one of my goals for last month, just 25 pieces of content, where all I really did was just find old content that isn't too up to date with best practices, best SEO practices, like having H2 headers.
Yeah.
And I'll just do that. And if there's a internal link that I could add there, I would also add that in. And but that was as far as, like, I was adding more content. It was just like quickly updating H2 headers.
Yeah, I think that's the problem in my case, because in my case, it's not a problem with like H2 tags and things like that. I think that part is all right on all the articles. It's more a matter of kind of going back and maybe refreshing the content, adding a new section, rewriting a section, and so on. And that's something I'm not sure how to hire somebody for. It's a challenge, I guess, that I have go through. But it's not as easy as hiring a writer for X amount of money per 1,000 words, right? It's probably an hourly kind of position.
Yeah.
And you also probably want somebody that's a really good writer, but that also kind of understands SEO. And again, I think it's my job to figure out what the procedure is and to kind of standardize that. But I think it's much more difficult to standardize than the writing part and the content publishing part.
Have you ever done it in the past at all?
I've done it with some articles where I like added a new product into kind of like the 10 best, whatever, dog leashes kind of article, or like, added a new section, rewritten the intro and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. but not at scale. And this to me, that's the biggest problem, because I think I always try to figure out how to get it done, but not with me having to like edit 500 articles.
Yeah.
But maybe it starts just like with the other things, with me actually editing 50 and then seeing what are kind of the common things and how can it be systemized and standardized and how can I create some sort of guideline around it.
Yeah. For the ones that you've updated, have you seen results on them or no? Or did you not track?
I think it's hit and miss. I've definitely seen in some articles an uptick, especially in the beginning. And I think that's what it's good for. If you go back and like regularly update your articles, then I think if you reindex them for the Search Console, you can see some boosts in ranking, I think.
Okay. Because I know I like maybe back in April, I updated one article, like just with the images that it has on that page. Maybe I added just a bit of more content. Let me see. Well, since I'm in Google Analytics now, and as of for the past, what is it? Well, I guess past week, it's in my top three most visited pages, and it used to be like the top seven. Well, it used to be number seven, I think, or the 10th.
Nice.
And so it bumped up, but let me see traffic from when I updated it to now. I think April 20th was when I published it or something.
Yeah.
And let me send you, let me do a more long-term screenshot, not just from April to July, but from January. And let me send you this over Facebook Messenger. Take a look.
Oh, nice.
So there's like a giant dip on April 12th and 11th. Not sure why, but I know that I updated it like around the 19th or the 20th. And I don't know. Well, I can't say that it was my action specifically, but that's the thing. Like, it's also hard to rule things out.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like there's always some updates going on and the rankings are jumping up and down.
Yeah.
I think they're much more volatile nowadays than they used to be like 3-4 years ago.
I think so. And plus, there's a lot of people, like, you know, like a listener might be listening to this and be like, all right, that's cool, I got a whole process. But you have to also contend with the fact that there's like probably tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of, not millions, of other content writers following the same exact strategy and pumping out tons of content for all kinds of niches. That my biggest worry is that, you know, like just publishing content is it's like a race to the bottom. Because if you, for example, if you Google one of these, like for example, how to start a business, right? Just for example's sake, if you Google that, there'll be probably no shortage of like content, probably thousands of posts down, like, I don't know, the first 100 pages of the Google search that are kind of rehashes of each other.
Yeah.
And people just keep posting this stuff because they want to kind of get in and, you know, get a slice of the pie. And that's my kind of worry with content marketing and publishing new stuff, is that it all kind of leads down that road where at some point Google will have to make some sort of kind of decisions as to how to eliminate the rest of the junk.
Yeah, I guess I agree, but I also disagree, because I definitely agree that at the piece of content level, a lot of it is commoditized.
Yeah.
But I think the advantage is in the configuration. So I think, like, if you're a new blogger and you have $1,000 to invest, and you invested in the wrong articles that are already too competitive, you're out of the market because you run out of money, or you run out of time, or you run out of patience. So I think the keyword research is where the competitive advantage is for the most part. And then if you can select the right keywords for a long enough time, then you can grow and grow and grow and go after the more authoritative pieces, right? After the more authoritative keywords.
Yeah.
So I don't think the advantage is in the content itself, although you can definitely have an advantage in the content itself, and you should aim to have great articles. But I think the real advantage is in the order that in which you decide to tackle the content.
Okay.
It's almost like chess or something. It's like the pieces are the same, but the order in which you move them and where you go is what determines the winner.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's a fair assessment. But it might be discouraging for a beginner to be like, hey, am I doing the right stuff? But maybe that's the way it works. Because I don't know, like I figured out the game a little later on. Like I'll just, for the longest time, I was just publishing spaghetti against the wall, you could say, to see what sticks.
Yeah, and I think that spaghetti against the wall approach works if you're passionate about a topic and you've got the drive to kind of keep working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the less spaghetti on the wall and the more systemic you are from the beginning, the higher likelihood of your success, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that said, it's pretty much the same in my case, because my first semi-successful thing was my aviation blog, which was... It wasn't necessarily spaghetti against the wall, but it was like, all right, I flew on this flight, so I write about this flight. I flew on that flight, so I write about that flight. And it was essentially a random assortment of different experiences that I've had that were not necessarily chosen in order to grow the blog. It was kind of the other way around. I did this, so I'm going to write about it. And I have no doubt that that's kind of how the best content is born. Because again, when you compare the quality of content on my aviation site and on my other sites, I think it's like comparing, I don't know, like a French restaurant and Burger King. But I think they both have their spot in the business portfolio or whatever.
Well, yeah, definitely a more calculated approach is better. I think that's how everyone kind of starts out. We start out with throwing spaghetti against the wall. Then we realize we need to take a smarter approach. And then we start optimizing our approach. It's like, you know, you go to the gym for the first time, you're just lifting whatever. And then you're like, all right, I need to get a little better at this. So you start... checking out videos on how to improve and what exercises to do. And instead of just doing whatever, now you have a more organized, systematic approach to working out. I think that's probably the case with everything. You know, you just start, I think that's how all creation starts or how all projects start. First, you're just doing whatever because it's fun. But then once you want to reach another level or a higher level, you kind of need a much more guided approach.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting because I think if you think about how many people probably start their online journeys from like Googling how to make money online, I would say those are the majority.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I think even though they're the majority, probably their success rate is much lower than those people that kind of just stumble upon something that they really enjoy doing and then realize, oh, maybe this thing can actually make money.
Yeah.
And where the how to make money online is not their first search because they need to pay for rent next month, need to figure out how to get that money. But because they realized they created some asset that they can potentially make even more efficient and monetize more and so on.
I think, yeah, you got it right over there. And always, I thought similarly in the same, like this whole concept or just earning or profiting or monetizing is a lot easier when you already have the ball rolling with something. So for example, you know, if you're already making videos about fitness, if you're already making a website about dogs, or if you're already doing something along some sort of industry or topic, as long as you're running, then it's easier to monetize it because you already have existing assets. But for someone that's Googling, how do I make money? It's like, well, first you have you have to have an asset. You know, you kind of have to have that piece of work, and it's just much harder for them. Whereas like for a person that's been making workout videos for fun, all they really have to do now is slap a link or an ad, and now it starts working for them. Whereas for a person that's like, they just want to make money, it's a lot harder for them because they're trying to get the result first. Or I don't know, it's a very backwards approach.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's interesting. You mentioned that they try to get the result first. And I think that's not the problem, but I think that's the biggest difference. It's like, if you do something because you love it, you do it because of the process. You don't start your aviation blog because you want 1,000 people to read it. You start it because you want to share your experiences flying different things.
Yeah.
Or you want to somehow keep them documented, right? It's like, I can now go back to my blog and like really vividly remember some of the most enjoyable flights I've taken in my life. And And there it's really about the process. Whereas if you start with how to make money online, then you kind of have this goal of, all right, I'm making whatever, $3,000 in my job right now. So I want to replace it within a year and a half. And then you realize it's not as easy as it might sound. And you fail to hit that goal. And it's kind of like, oh, what did I do all this for if I didn't make it to the 3,000 per month mark within a year and a half or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's good to kind of stumble upon something because then you know it works and it worked for you rather than somebody telling you, okay, if you do this, you will get this result. Because again, no result is guaranteed.
Yeah.
And especially with this type of business, like the feedback loop is so slow that you can essentially be working for a year, be seeing the exact same results. You can have two people working for a year full-time on their blog. And throughout that 1 year, throughout the first year, both of them will be seeing the exact same result, which is nothing or $10 a month.
Yeah.
And then in year two, one person will continue seeing $0 because all they've been doing last year was wrong. Whereas the other person, all they've been doing has compounded and suddenly they're making $2,000-$4,000 per month, right?
Yeah.
And like on the surface, it seemed like both people were blogging and both people are working hard. And it just takes a lot of time for that to kind of show, which can be discouraging too.
It definitely is discouraging, which is why I guess never focus on the result just yet. There's a point in time for everything. For the biggest takeaway for beginners, yeah, never focus on that. I want to make money with this. And it's you will have a much stronger advantage if you just focus on putting out the work, whether it's writing about, I don't know, the topic or the industry that you like, or making videos about it, or even like, you know, just if you're an artist creating art, if you're a musician, just putting out music nonstop, just putting it out there, because the rest kind of starts making sense later on. Because with more work that you put out, there's more chance of it gaining visibility, meaning you get to build an audience base. And once you have an audience base or a sufficient amount of traffic, that's where the monetization starts coming into play. But it has to start from that putting out work first.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I kind of said yes and no to when you said, oh, just start writing.
Yeah.
Because I think it really is a balance. Like, yeah, just start writing, because just starting to write is already ahead of 99% of people. And it kind of gets you moving.
Yeah.
But if you just start writing and just continue doing that, then you're likely not going to succeed. Especially if somebody's listening to this, then they're probably thinking of it as somebody that Googles how to make money online, essentially, right? It's not like they already have their blog about, I don't know, about space or about aircraft or about language or whatever, and they already have a lot of visitors or making a lot of money. They're just at the beginning. And if you're at the beginning and you just start writing but don't see any results relatively quickly, then again, it's discouraging. So I think it's a balance between moving, but also moving systematically. And then also looking back, I guess.
Yeah, I just think that part comes with time, because anyone that puts in slightly more time, it's part of a natural process where they want to start improving. And they start asking themselves, all right, what I'm doing right now, is it working? And how could I improve? I think it's just like a natural process. The longer you kind of stick with it, the more it kind of becomes apparent to you that you have to follow a certain process in order to start getting better. I don't think anyone just like...
You underestimate I think you underestimate the level to which people actually reflect on what they're doing and then go back to fix their course.
All right. Maybe I do. Maybe I am overestimating.
Yeah, you're optimistic about humanity.
Well, maybe I am, but like, at least I'd like to think that... Because for me, it also took me ages, but like I think it's just a natural progression, you know. But yeah, maybe I'm overestimating. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think that's a problem with passion too. So if I had an aircraft blog and it didn't get any visitors, I'd still keep doing the same thing. But again, if somebody's coming here to start a business outright, then the money is the measure to a large extent.
Yeah.
So it needs to be much more rigorous.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but all in all, yeah, just start writing. We always say that here, and I think it's true. It's better to do something than not do anything. And then...
In the case of content creation, it's better to do something.
Exactly. Putting stuff out there. And hopefully, I think we went over the things at a relatively high level, but hopefully it gave people some idea in terms of, all right, if I want to do this thing, and if I want to do it at a kind of at scale, if I want to publish content regularly...
Yeah.
How should I organize myself or organize my team or organize my tools or whatever?
Yeah, just pick, you know, the best thing is pick a plan and stick with it. It could be the worst plan in the world, but like something to follow is much more important than having nothing to follow. Like you always kind of want a North Star that you can rely on. even if it's wrong, like let's say someone comes up with a plan, all right, I'm going to do one post once a month, right? On our, probably from our point of view, that's like not enough. Maybe you should put in more work. But I say it's good enough because one, it gets the ball rolling. Two, it tells you what to do. And something, in the case of content creation, in the case of building up and developing an asset, I think, yeah, like you said, moving is better than not doing anything at all.
Yeah, and I think to go back to what you said about any plan is better than no plan or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I think that's true as long as you realize what that plan can realistically achieve. So like if somebody takes a plan and says, all right, I'm going to publish once a month, and then in 2 years, I'm going to have a site that makes $10,000 a month, then they're just crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's...
But if that person understands, okay, so I don't have too much time or I don't have too much money to invest in this or whatever, so I'm just going to do an article a month. And if mm-hmm. they understand it, okay, maybe in 2 years, I will have a site that makes $100 or $200 a month.
Yeah.
That's perhaps realistic. And again, if you have a site that makes $100 or $200 per month, that's like a site that's worth $3,000 to $6,000, right? Mm-hmm. So again, it's not a huge asset, but it's an asset nonetheless.
Yeah.
That you can build just by posting once a month.
I mean, like the assumption is that, yeah, well, no plan, an imperfect plan is better than no plan. But I am also, again, maybe I'm putting too much on the audience here, but like it also has to be within you to come back and be like, all right, is what I'm doing working? Because like, you know, one plan A is good enough, but eventually plan A is going to stop working and you're going to need a plan B.
Yeah.
Meaning like let's say you stick with it and it got you your first 100 visits or something, or got you your first 100 subscribers.
Yeah.
Now you want to reach 1,000 or 10,000. Sure, you can keep doing what you're doing right now, but you're also going to have to add something new.
Yeah.
To reach the next level. So it always has to be like, you have to have a nuance. I think in my opinion, you should have a nuanced thought about this. It's important to have a plan, but it's also important to understand that that plan may not work in the long run and that you need to adjust that plan and add some more stuff to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Any final thoughts? Any more thoughts? Or did I say too much?
Yeah, I think it's right. And again, any plan is better than no plan, and just got to keep moving and got to keep publishing.
Yeah.
Publishing and reflecting. Always look back and yeah, and don't be impatient, but at the same time, don't be too patient. If you're doing something for a year and you still have zero visitors, then you're doing something wrong. There's no doubt about that.
Maybe you didn't set up Google Analytics properly on your website.
That's the other option. Maybe you have like 100,000 visitors, but but your tracking code's off or something. It's reporting zero.
Oh, always double check. But you know, it's a common thing. You know, every once in a while, someone would be like, "Hey, I don't have any visits on my blog. What's going on?" That's something really basic that's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't set up your Google Analytics properly.
Yeah. Try to avoid that.
What happens?
Yeah, I can imagine it happening. Just use a plugin, Monster Insights or Google. Pretty easy to set up.
All right. Any final thoughts anymore? Because I think we've covered it to a good extent.
Yeah, I think we've covered the entire process from kind of how we come up with the keywords. So whether it's using Ahrefs or kind of just brainstorming a bunch of ideas through how we prepare the brief. So the outline being kind of the most important piece of it there.
Yeah.
Through how we write it, so whether it's using some tool to send it to your writers or writing it yourself, again, based on the outline, editing, formatting, always reread your articles.
And like also always re-listen to the podcast that we put out.
Roger.
For the quality assurance.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah. And yeah, exactly, always go back. And and then finally publish this stuff. And if you're like Yuri, then share it on social media. I think it works for a lot of people. If you're like me, then just wait for the Google gods to bring you some traffic.
And then curse the gods when they take it away.
Exactly. At least everything's out of your control. And then go back to the content to update it every now and then. Something I definitely got to get much better at. Something that you, Yuri, are doing fairly frequently. Go back to add internal links every now and then. That's the one thing that I think I do fairly regularly. It's good. And then just wait for the traffic. And if it comes, it comes. Maybe it will come after 8 months. Maybe it will come after half a year. Maybe it will come after a year. But I think if it doesn't come after a year, at least to some extent, then you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's time to reassess what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Or you could do it like I did and blindly walk into monetizing. Because I think I've kept at it for like 2 years before I saw like a 25-cent earnings.
Yeah. And this is the other thing. Like if you enjoy the topic and writing about it, then and don't need the money, just do it for the fun of it, like I'm doing my aviation blog.
Did you write a new post? Any plans?
I had a writer. So I found a couple of writers, all of them pilots. Mm-hmm. So I had them write some samples. The first one, she's an airline pilot in Canada.
Oh yeah, I think we went over this one last episode.
So she submitted her first article. I'll publish it sometimes next week. And I also still have a couple of articles that I need to write myself, but I didn't get to it.
Okay.
But yeah, as I mentioned to you a couple of times when we were chatting, it seems like both a couple of Google algorithms helped my aviation site kind of come back to life. And also the travel seems to be kind of picking up just in general. Yeah. So I think I'm going to put in a lot more efforts into growing.
That's awesome. It's, you know, to me, it's interesting like that you have multiple sites lying around in a way, and some of them can be dormant. And then suddenly, like, for example, just by random chance, Google and a Google algorithm will bring it to life. And now it's like a growing asset, but you've held on to it for a while and it was kind of sitting there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of the ultimate goal, is to just have a portfolio of sites. Because again, I think no single site is resistant to Google algorithms. Everybody's going to get hit at some point.
Yeah.
But if you have two sites or three sites or four sites, if you're unlucky, then all four of them will be hit negatively. Mm. But kind of on average, it should more balance out, right? And some should go up, some should go down. And again, I think the Google algorithms and stuff like that, it's something you can't avoid at this point. Got to live with it. That said, it seems like you've been much more resistant to them than I've been.
Maybe because I don't follow SEO rules to the T.
Yeah.
So they have a hard time tracking me down. But who knows? It's just a theory.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's it for the process. And then let's get the Sam Walton book and learn about Walmart.
All right. That sounds good to me. And I guess today I'll try and request some articles, because I've been kind of slacking after that stretch goal month.
Yeah.
Maybe I wore myself out and I'm just not in the mood to do anything.
Yeah.
It's also really a hot summer in Japan. So it also kind of knocks out your motivation.
Yeah. It's so hot. But yeah, I've done 45 briefs last week, so time to outsource those, and I gotta find a new writer or two to add to the team.
Well, if you're listening, if someone's listening and they want to write, could go to sidehustlesandstuff.com and contact us through the comments or something. Give Keishi a holler.
Yep, always welcome.
All right, this has been the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast, episode 56. If you want to start your own side hustle, you're gonna need a website. For that, we recommend Bluehost, and you can check out our link in the Side Hustles and Stuff show notes. Go to sidehustlesandstuff.com/E56. Why are we recommending it? And it's because you need a website, and Bluehost is a good place to buy your own website and get your project out into the world and start publishing. So the website kind of makes it real. So check out the show notes, check out Bluehost, buy your own.com, and just start publishing. And that's it. Go to sidehustlesandstuff.com/E56, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.